I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, at least one Seattle politician is willing to say there needs to be accountability on our homelessness response. She joins us. Plus, speaking of our homeless response, another Seattle bureaucrat fails up. Plus, Nicole and I are still waiting on that day of reckoning we were promised by a local educator for voting for Donald Trump. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, right now, until November 17th, we are running a promo on our Patreon page. You can get 1 year of Undivided for 30% off. Support our work, support our watchdog journalism. Just use the promo code watchdog at patreon.com/undivided. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Well, I was like all ready to start the show with good news, good story. We do have good stories for you, but I'm so mad. I mean, we just found out a couple minutes ago, you know, that guy that beat his dog? We started the show with it yesterday, caught on camera in a homelessness housing thing, paid for with your money, beating his dog senseless. Yeah, well, he was just released by a Seattle judge without any bail. Oh no, go ahead. Go back to the apartment that our tax money pays for, where you were just caught on camera, beating your dog senseless, choking it from behind, punching it, throwing it. Yeah, not a problem. You don't pose a danger to anyone else. Like, not even a nominal amount of bail. It's so crazy with these Seattle judges, and we're trying to get the judge's name because we weren't there. We just got the email from the King County Prosecutor's Office. They asked for bail to be set and for him to be held. And then, of course, activist judges, they're like, no, no big deal. It's so weird, this pattern of things, because it's either like they set bail, you know, for really serious, like a murder, right? And they're like, okay, we'll set bail at $2 million. Or it's like, no bail. I mean, I covered the courts for years. It used to be like, okay, you know, we're not going to set bail at $500,000, but $10,000. You know, because this is a guy who was just plucked out of a homeless encampment, put, and he's 19 years old, I think, born in 2005. His name's Isaiah David O'Neill Sapp. And we're looking into his criminal history, et cetera. But we know people living in this homelessness housing place on Capitol Hill, many of them were plucked out of this Burien homeless encampment that had all sorts of issues and just put there, again, paid for with our money, no case manager on site, which we'll get to momentarily. But you don't see as a judge, because a judge is supposed to determine these decisions based on threat to the community, right? If somebody is released, the likelihood that they'll reappear for court, because that's what bail, you know, does, is it's sort of a monetary promise to reappear, and you're going to lose money if you don't come back to court. So it's sort of weighing how much money would it take to make sure that they come back to court. And then it's ability to pay, right? So it has to be sort of reasonable that you could come up with that amount of money. And so you're looking at, this person's obviously indigent. But at the same time, okay, then set the bail at $5,000. Set it at something where they have to put something up to come back to court. This guy was beating a dog senseless. You don't think that somebody that beats a dog like that is capable of inflicting pain on a human being? Of course they are. So now I'm just pissed off all over again. No bail? Wild stuff. We will get the name of that judge. These judges, I mean, we have got 12 years of Jay Inslee judges. And I don't know how we ever come back from that. But so to set the story back up again, you know, on Capitol Hill, there had been some neighbors. They took a video through a window of what is an apartment building run by the King County Regional Homelessness Authority of this young guy beating this dog senseless. So then, of course, we had this fantastic update for you on the show yesterday where we learned Seattle City Council member Joy Hollingsworth, who represents the District 3 up on Capitol Hill, went down to that building yesterday, would not leave until the dog was safe. Would not leave, got to meet the dog, cute little 10-month-old pit bull mix named Angel. And so she flagged down police, and they did not leave until that dog was out of that apartment. Because one of the weird things that I can't wrap my mind around is police did arrest this guy over the weekend for animal cruelty. And he has to sit in the King County Jail until today because yesterday was a holiday. So there's a little bit of joy I get out of that. The fact that he didn't get a court appearance right away, had to sit there for a few days before a judge said, oh, go bye, go beat more animals, right? So she rescues this dog. And I gave her so much credit in the world yesterday for doing what apparently no one else would do. But one of the things that bothered me about it is the dog was still there. You know, why would you go in and arrest someone for animal cruelty and then not take the dog too? Because there was a woman living in this apartment. You see her in the video, and she's not doing anything to stop the dog beating. you know, in this homeless, again, housing complex that they're living there with our tax money. So why would you not take the dog out immediately? There's some confusion about that that we're still trying to get to the bottom of. But anyway, you know, above and beyond this being a really sad story about this dog, obviously it has a nexus with the homeless industrial complex and the concerns, rightfully so, that this community has and had when they learned that this building was going to be used to house people who were coming out of homeless encampments. They had every right in the world to be concerned about possible criminal activity. I mean, there was criminal activity at the camp in Berrien where a lot of these people came from. So just putting a roof over their head isn't going to stop what's leading to those issues like substance abuse and mental illness. So anyway, I mentioned, you know, we were in contact with Councilwoman Hollingsworth yesterday. And we asked her to come on the show because almost more important than the fact that she saved this dog is the fact that she made the rounds on local news last night, saying what needs to be said about apartment buildings like this one and the risks, the public safety concerns associated with them. So we taped an interview with Councilwoman Hollingsworth earlier this morning. Here it is. Councilwoman, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Brandy.
Yeah, first question, how's Angel doing?
Angel's doing really well. We had a great meeting with the vet. You know, she had a lot of love last night, a lot of food, a lot of just love and care, and, you know, just a lot of kisses, too.
What's going to happen to her?
Right now, she went to a foster home. I dropped her off there this morning. So she is with a loving family right now. She's going to get a ton of love and I'll continue to get updates. But right now we're just trying to nurse her back to health and make sure that she can have a full healthy life.
Yeah, obviously we saw the video. When you got her, were there any obvious problems with her?
You know, some of the problems, she was skittish. She was scared, very malnourished. You know, you could kind of unfortunately see her rib cage, and she was just really timid, and you didn't know what type of, you know, internal stuff was going on, right? She has a rabies shot, what wellness check. So we did all that with the vet and we got, you know, what needs to happen, and we got a plan forward to make her healthy.
Did I hear something about it's your family's veterinary clinic?
Yeah, we did. So we have two of them, and so we took this one to our family vet clinic out in Renton. They were phenomenal and gave her so much love and care and attention, and we're just so grateful.
That's awesome. So there's a couple themes here I want to talk about, obviously, to kind of move forward with the story. I got to ask, what inspired you to actually go? I mean, there's a lot of stuff that happens in this city, right? What was this like on a Monday where you're like, I'm going and I'm not leaving until it's taken care of?
Yeah, it was Veterans Day, so I know a lot of businesses and things were closed, especially the government, and also just seeing the video. I don't think anyone could watch that video and not want to act and figure out how they triage. I'm a problem solver, so I start trying to figure out, okay, what do we need to do? Who do we need to call? How do we act? How do we do this in a very compassionate way? Because there's a lot of emotions involved in this. The community was really phenomenal. The Seattle Police Department were great, addressing the criminality in this piece with the abuse. And I think it ended well. We have a happy ending and, looking forward to seeing Angel be a dog again.
Yeah. So the suspect in this case, initially based on social media posts from people up in that neighborhood, they thought that police hadn't taken action. They were told at one point this is a civil matter, not a criminal matter. But it turns out that this guy had been arrested over the weekend. In fact, he has his first court appearance today. He had to spend a long weekend in the King County Jail because it was a holiday weekend. So we'll see what happens at his first court appearance. But I guess the question I have, and I don't know if you've been able to get this answer from Seattle PD, is if he was arrested for animal abuse, why was the dog left there?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I know that, you know, they had seen the video, and so he was the only one in the video committing an act of violence against a dog. But it was still in a situation that was just unfortunate. There had been reports from different neighbors seeing different, you know, things happen to that dog left in there in that home, and we had to address it, Brandy. And I hope that we can start taking this very seriously about things that are happening in the buildings, situations that are spilling out into our streets, and making sure that people have the proper services that they can for their mental health and wellness.
Yeah, and that's what we need to talk about. And I said it on my show yesterday. I mean, there are people who are housed, who have a home, who abuse their animals. I mean, it's not an issue that's like specific to the homeless community or the formerly homeless community or anything like that. I want to make that clear. But this apartment, this is not the first time this apartment building has been on your radar, correct?
It has not. It's we've gotten a lot of emails and people reaching out about some, you know, drugs, criminality, just certain things that are happening, people getting taken advantage of. Unfortunately, I'm not trying to demonize anyone in that building. There's just certain stuff that comes along with that. And so we're trying to address that, because my prime focus here are obviously the neighborhood around it and then making sure the people in that building are safe.
Right. And this is common sense stuff. So we find out that, you know, a few dozen people living there had been taken from this very problematic, dangerous homeless encampment where people were dying in Berrien, and dropped in this building that's being run by the King County Regional Homelessness Authority. So when that happened, first of all, were you aware as it was going on that people were being brought in from that homeless encampment to live there?
No, I was not aware. It was brought to my attention. We have a ton of other buildings that we are, you know, constantly trying to have to deal with certain things happening. So I was not aware, but I got the backstory and was very concerned about the case management piece that was missing. That's a critical piece to any of these buildings where we're bringing people, you know, from that people are experiencing homelessness inside. And then now we have to have the wraparound services to make sure that they're safe, and that, you know, certain things aren't happening that are affecting people around them, which is incredibly important.
Well, and so that's true. So this, what I saw is this building has no case manager?
From my understanding, it's in the middle of trying to figure out what that looks like. But as of now, that is not the case.
So these people who are coming in from a homeless encampment, given a place to live, there is no one there from King County Regional Homeless Authority, a case manager during the day to help them out.
From my understanding, I don't know. That's something that you might have to follow up with them. But what I am stressing for is that we have people on site 24/7 that can be able to make sure that we are being accountable and transparent about the services that we're providing for people. Because right now, it's not working.
Well, otherwise, you're not really bettering their circumstance, right? If you take someone who's an active drug abuse who's living in a tent, and then you put them in an apartment, like, they've got a roof over their head, but you're not getting them help for the issue that probably landed them on the streets in the first place. The King County Regional Homeless Authority gets most of its funding from the city of Seattle. To what extent do you feel like there's been appropriate oversight of that authority?
Well, let me first say this, Brandy. I fully support King County Regional Homeless Authority. I think mm-hmm. we need to have a regional approach. However, in addition to, we also need to have better accountability and metrics and understand what are we doing to move the needle? What are our measures of success, right? Those are basic fundamental pieces. What are our measures of success? And the other piece to this is making sure that people are good neighbors. I mean, that is a huge part to this. I can't begin to tell you how many people, especially families, are talking about their kids having to experience certain things, walking to get to places, or, you know, stumbling upon certain things that is encroaching on, you know, their front porch, or a daycare that's right around the corner from that across Broadway, that have to experience things that I don't think any parent would want their kid to see or have to, you know, smell or be around. Like, mm-hmm. that's just basic, right? And that's not a political thing. That is a nonpartisan issue. Just being human beings. I want to stress that enough.
Well, yeah. And I think that's, and I said this as much on social media last night, you know, as awesome as you rescuing this sweet baby pup was, which is great. And I commend you for an extraordinary act of public service and caring. To me, the more powerful thing you did is get on the news yesterday and just tell the truth. Like, hey, you know, because we can't make these systems better unless people in power, like, are willing to point out when they're falling short, right? Like, hey, you know, no, we have to have case management here. We have to make sure the community's safe. We have to make sure these people are getting help. But for some reason, I feel like there aren't a lot of elected leaders who are willing to just point out clear deficiencies in our homelessness response.
Yeah, look, I'm willing to say that I'm a part of the problem too, because I work for the city of Seattle. And so I have to take ownership too as a government official to be like, hey, this is my problem as well. Like, you know, when I say we as King County Regional Homeless Authority with the city of Seattle, all these government officials, we have to take responsibility. I've never been shy away to run away from accountability and transparency at all. And I think when you identify your flaws and holes, you want to get better. That's the athlete in me. Hey, how do we get better? How do we improve off this? You can't shy away from that. And I think if we could just come to a common sense approach of understanding that when we put people directly from an encampment into a building, that we have to give them wraparound services so they can be able to function properly within the rest of society, and they can be able to, you know, continue to be self-sufficient. if we have to be able to start from that conversation in that place.
Yeah. So dog safe, you know, that's taken care of. But as a councilwoman now with that hat on, who are you trying to talk to about that? Are you asking questions? Are you asking questions of whom? I mean, what is the follow-up you're taking as a councilwoman to make sure these deficiencies are being addressed?
Yeah, the follow-up, the first thing, so I have short-term goals and long-term goals. The first term, short-term goal for this building specifically is, hey, who is going to be on site day-to-day, making sure that there's wellness checks for the people that are in the building, the staff that are there, and also the animals that are with some of the residents. That is number one. Number two is going to be, okay, what's our long-term solution to secure the building to make sure that some of the activities that are spilling out into the street, that some of the neighbors have concerns about, safety stuff, get addressed with the various city departments that are going to be able to function. And last but not least, how do we make sure this doesn't happen again? Right. So what are those conversations going to be like with our regional homeless authority to make sure that, hey, when we, you know, do certain things, that we have a game plan so we don't have instances, we can minimize stuff like this. You're going to have instances that happen like this. Right. This just happened to be a really bad case of someone recording a very bad abusive situation of a dog that was just completely unacceptable. And so, you know, we're gonna have those conversations in the next couple of days.
Yeah. Let me end with this. You said something earlier I want to ask you about. You said, I support the King County Regional Homelessness Authority. I'll be frank. I do not. I think it should be disbanded. I have my reasons for that. You know, homelessness has gotten worse since the King County Regional Homelessness Authority began. There's been a lot of incompetence among leadership of that authority, which we're discussing elsewhere on the show today. But I guess, what has the King County Regional Homelessness Authority done that has earned your support?
Yeah, I've seen, great question, right? I've seen them in action in terms of triaging different encampment resolutions, whether they're in different parts of the city. I understand the vision of where they're trying to go. I just don't think we have proper execution. And so I'm still, from my point of view, I think it still needs to be a regional approach. We just have to have better metrics and transparency. So I'm not willing to give up just yet, but I know that there's a sense of urgency, and people, we live in Seattle, Brandy, people are so willing to give their money and their heart, mm-hmm. and whatever, if they have outcomes, they want to see outcomes. We are a very given city. I grew up here 4 generations deep, but people have to see outcomes. And that's what people are asking for now. And more than ever, we need to see improvement.
Yeah, and that's what this is all common sense. This is what we should all want. Like, if we've got X amount of money to go toward the homeless crisis, every single person who has care and compassion for these people should want that amount of money to be working toward actually achieving that outcome. And if we're doing things that aren't, then that money needs to be put somewhere else where we are having good outcomes. So Councilwoman Joy Hollingsworth, thank you for saving the dog. Hero of the week. And for all the community members there who spoke up to bring you to that doorstep. And then, yeah, we'd like to watch and see what happens here in terms of case manager at that building, improvements in King County Regional Homelessness Authority, so we can get better outcomes, because that's a goal. So thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm going to get you to be a fan of the Regional Homeless Authority soon.
That is going to take, you know, commendable goal. Commendable goal. Yeah, I'd like to see them stop squandering money on things that aren't working, and some accountability. And that's where you come in, your fellow council members. The city of Seattle has, like as I said earlier, giving a lot of money toward that end. And so, you know, you guys deserve to know what the outcomes are. Good goal. We'll check back in 7 years and see if that goal has come to fruition.
Thank you, Brandy.
Councilman, appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's the kind of goal that it's like Governor Inslee's climate goals. You know, you set them, you kind of forget them because they're going to come to fruition. We appreciate the councilwoman taking time to come on the show. And I appreciate the attitude she's taking with these things. Community members shouldn't have to feel concerned about speaking up and saying, no, I deserve to be safe. Like, no, I have a problem with a department that's having no additional security or case management, where you're taking people out of homeless encampments who are dealing with issues like substance abuse and mental health and moving them in next door to me. Like, that's okay. It's okay to say that as a progressive. It's okay to say that as a liberal. It's okay to say that as a Republican. It's okay to say that as someone who has no political label whatsoever. It doesn't make you a bad person. It doesn't make you a NIMBY. It makes you just a real person who's concerned about your safety. Like, and that's okay. And I'm glad that Councilwoman Joy Hollingsworth is telling them it's okay to think that too. And we do need to have better safeguards in place for law-abiding community members who aren't drug addicted, who aren't dealing with a mental illness, etc. So we will be following up on this. And for the love of God, we will also be getting to the bottom of what judge it was that set the dog abuser free without any bail to go back into the community. Just the order that, oh, you can't have contact with animals. Yeah, I don't think he cares. Don't think he cares. Just insane. All right, so speaking of the crime crisis, do I feel bad saying this? Checking moral? No, I don't. I think there's a lot of Democrats in the state of Washington who do not care about the outcome of their policies. The only outcome they care about is whether they get to keep their jobs. The only outcome they care about is whether there's any consequence at the ballot box. And what voters showed them last week is that there aren't consequences for them at the ballot box. And so they're going to double, triple down on their failed policies around crime, because if they don't see an electoral consequence for them, in their mind, they don't care if there are negative, real consequences on the streets. Because, like, well, people keep voting me back in, so whatever I'm doing must be working, when it's really, really not. But what I will say is I really don't believe that Democrats are or will take seriously the communities that have traditionally gone for them that are starting to revolt. And we're seeing this at the national level too. Remember, Democrats nationally in the mainstream media, you know, when they're looking at the results and Trump winning, they're like, oh, it's racism and misogyny. Like, paying no attention to the fact that Hispanic voters, Asian voters, immigrant voters are going further to the right. So it's like, are you calling them racist? That doesn't make any sense. So by all means, like, continue to ignore the real issues that are going on. And that is what's happening right now at a smaller scale, so that you have that happening nationally, but at a smaller scale in Seattle's Chinatown International District. It's a microcosm of this same trend nationally. So we talked on the show yesterday about the stabbing spree that happened in the Chinatown International District, which, if you're not familiar, is just kind of between downtown Seattle and the stadiums. From Como News, CID business owners make demands after stabbing spree, saying there's no accountability. Henry Koo, who owns Henry's Taiwan Kitchen next to 12th and Jackson, is so angry that he's even considered suing the city over the city's failure to address these public safety issues. Koo's message to the city is simple: stop allowing illegal activity to happen. He told Como News, this is ridiculous. He's tired of having a front seat to the drug use, drug dealing, a black market, and weekly instances of violence. He said the city needs to build up the law, enforce the law. We cannot allow anyone's drugs on the street. Another CID business owner who wanted to stay anonymous said there's nothing being done. There's no accountability. This community, and here's what I really think is going on there. Democrats felt like, okay, we have the Asian American vote, immigrant vote, like, on lock. That's no problem to us. We'll claim to care about them, but we won't actually do anything to address their concerns. And they'll just stay quiet, you know, because they're immigrants and maybe there's a language barrier, and they'll just shut up and they won't talk to the media and they won't do all these things. Well, they're not shutting up. They are talking to the media. And they are angry, and they see what you're doing. They see that you use them as kind of political pawns, you know, for a good photo opportunity now and then you ignore them. Like, you ignored them when you tried to dramatically expand the size of a homelessness complex in their neighborhood, and they took to the streets to protest with big pictures of Democratic leadership's faces on them, like Dow Constantine crossed off. Like, you weren't listening to them then. You didn't learn their lesson. Then you had these open-air drug markets and markets of stolen merchandise, 12th and Yesler, that would just be allowed to continue, no problem in the world. And then the city would go in for some photo ops where the mayor would be painting over the graffiti, like, ha, look at me, everything's good. And then, of course, the cameras would go away and these open-air drug markets would just come on back. And then you've got stabbing sprees where they can't even walk around feeling safe. And they know the city's not doing anything about it. They are starting to connect the dots about, okay, we have a very clearly progressive city. Republicans aren't in power in our city or our state. So they're connecting the dots as to who they want to hold accountable. And now they're saying, we might have to sue. Like, can we, as business owners, we're paying taxes, sue the city for not doing a damn thing to try to keep us safe? Tanya Wu, who is the current council member, she's actually outgoing because she just lost her election. She was quoted in this Como News article. They said, we took these questions to outgoing city councilmember Tanya Wu, who grew up in the neighborhood. She said, quote, I think the city needs to make sure they have a constant presence here. I know the city has said they will have emphasis patrols, but of course we have a shortage of officers. But officers are not the only answer. We need groups like We Deliver Care and violence disruption groups. We need community members. We need diversion groups. Yeah, I don't know what the group We Deliver Care is going to do when there's a madman wielding a knife going on a stabbing spree. So like, yeah, cops are the answer, and we need to make sure that there is no vilification of law enforcement, and that from the city of Seattle level to the King County level to the state, and people like Bob Ferguson, we're putting people in office who respect law enforcement, who law enforcement want to work for, and we're shutting down the far lefties like Sean Scott, the police abolitionist Seattle just sent. They just sent a police abolitionist to Olympia. And you don't think that makes a difference when it comes to having and being able to hire more police officers? Like, police officers don't want to work in a state where they're sending police abolitionists to Olympia to make laws for all of us. So yeah, police are the answer. There's no other group that's going to respond to a crazy person going on a stabbing spree. So anyway, that's going on. The community has been in revolt there for about a year. Where again, I mean, there was just this, I wish I'd pulled video of this, massive Trump, but I think it was the Vietnamese community. It's a big Trump rally the week before the election. So, of course, you know, Seattle is blue. I'm not saying that, like, all of a sudden Seattle, like, Chinatown is going to flip and it's going to be like Trump country, right? But when you look at the data, so first I just want to show you, like, the core of Seattle in general. So it's, like, all blue. Hopelessly blue. And you've got a lot of these areas where like 70, 80% or more of voters are voting for the Democratic presidential candidate. This is data specifically for the presidential race for last week's election. But you'll see there's these two patches. If you're listening to the show and not watching, I'll try to describe it to you. There's these two patches where it's a little less blue. Still blue, still light blue, but a little less blue. One of them up in the Broadmoor neighborhood, which is, if you're not familiar, it's like by the by the 520 floating bridge, like across the water from the Husky Stadium. And then you see this little less blue patch down in downtown, south of downtown Seattle. So let me zoom into this a little bit. So these two areas could not be more different when it comes to the demographic. So the one up by Husky Stadium, that's the Broadmoor, that's the country club. That's like one of the richest neighborhoods in Seattle, very white also. And then the other one that is also lighter blue is the Seattle Chinatown International District. And there's a little, so it's important to know if you're watching, these are micro precincts. So these are precinct levels. There's one that's like a little bit red, but there's like one voter in that precinct and they voted for Donald Trump. So it's like, so don't, there's a little tiny little red, just ignore that. That's kind of, that is an outlier that we can't read too much into. But again, you have this hole in Seattle, all blue, 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 and then lighter blue. And it's so odd because one is this rich country club and the other one is the freaking Chinatown International District. So if we look at those two neighborhoods for the 2024 election, and again, these are precinct level, so very, very small microcosm, small little voting blocks where we're talking about, they represent a couple hundred voters, but it's really interesting data. So up in Broadmoor, which for a long time has been the quote unquote reddest district in Seattle, still not red, but the reddest, right? So they went 67%, the latest data, voted for Kamala Harris, and 29% for Donald Trump. Like 29% is not great, but that's still like in Seattle, that's about as good as it gets for Donald Trump. Well, now down in the Chinatown International District, specifically, we're looking at the precinct called King 1825. Well, they 62% for Kamala Harris and 35% for Donald Trump. It's the first presidential election that Chinatown International District, this specific precinct, is the most quote unquote red precinct. Overtaking Broadmoor. So in Broadmoor, rich white people gated neighborhood, 29% for Donald Trump. Chinatown International District, 35% for Donald Trump. Now, how does that compare to the last election in 2020, where, of course, Donald Trump was on the ticket as well? So in 2020, that neighborhood, that little microcosm, which is like the Wajamaya Apartments, there's an International House Senior Living Center that's in that precinct. In 2020, 20% of voters there voted for Donald Trump. 2024, 35% of voters there voted for Donald Trump. And it's still, we're talking about very small numbers here, right? Very small numbers here. But, and also it's very interesting because far more voters voted, and we've seen this across the country, right? In the 2020 elections, like where did all those votes come from? That's weird because like basically when it comes to Donald Trump, if you look at the two numbers, the actual number of votes, Donald Trump got 135 in 2020 and 136 in 2024. So it's like just one more voter, right? but still as a percentage of the voting population, because in 2020, Joe Biden had 507 voters in that precinct. 2024, Kamala Harris had 239. Where did those 250 votes go? They just vanished?
It's part of those 20 million we can't find.
That's sure strange. That's real strange, isn't it?
Interesting.
I mean, that's very interesting. But still, as a percentage, 35% compared to 20%. So 15% swing toward Donald Trump in a district that has become increasingly less blue. And now it kind of competes with the Broadmoor neighborhood. So it's just interesting. I think Democrats, to ignore that would be a bad idea. I mean, Washington State, we have a pretty significant Asian American population. To ignore what's happening there, which I think they will continue to ignore it. Oh, they don't know what they're talking about. Like, they ignored it when they had concerns about homelessness. They're ignoring it when there's a stabbing spree, you know, and they're going to ignore and find other ways to make excuses. For I already saw someone make an excuse, say, oh, there was just some outreach in that senior living center. And that's why, is like, they were in the senior living center. Okay, well, whoever went to the senior living center to get votes, that's great. Like, that's what they should be doing. Republicans should be in senior living centers in immigrant communities, going in and making inroads in these immigrant communities and these communities of color, and reaching out to them about, hey, vote for Donald Trump. Don't vote for Kamala Harris. Here's why. So it's just something to keep your eye on, because I do think, and we saw it nationally, you're going to see a significant shift in this regard. And Democrats are absolutely sleeping on immigrant communities, on communities of color, thinking that they've just got them in the bag. But yes, also, where do those 250 votes go from 2020 to? It's very strange. All of a sudden, just 250 people in that precinct, that's already a very small precinct, just decided I'm not going to vote anymore. Does that make me an election denier? I don't know. Gosh. I still think Donald Trump lost the 2020 election. But some of this stuff needs to be accounted for. That is very strange. Mm-hmm. Okay, anyway, we'll get back to that.
Uh-huh.
All right, I forgot to talk about this on the show yesterday. We have an update on that North Thurston school employee who went absolutely bonkers on Trump supporters and promised us that day of reckoning is coming. Maybe that's today. I don't know. First, I have encouraged you guys, if you're struggling with your weight, like I was on the weight loss roller coaster my whole life, gained a ton of weight during COVID, put on 40 pounds. Oh my God, I hate looking back at pictures of me during COVID. Like, what did I allow to happen to myself? Good God. And then, of course, they're my advertiser now, so I've got to put that picture on the stupid podcast every day of me looking like a stuffed jalapeno. I don't know, how stupid. But it's okay. It's like the worst picture of myself from October in 2020. I was thinking of things you stuff, like stuff sausage, whatever. Yeah. It's just like, you know, let me just say something quick. You know how like you have pictures that you hate of yourself?
Mm-hmm.
That is the picture I hate of myself more than maybe any other.
Yeah.
And now I show it on the podcast all the time. But it's okay because I lost 40 pounds because I saw that picture. You remember me telling you, like, do I look like this? And you're kind of like, But I'd put on all this weight and I was like, oh my gosh, I look terrible in all these pictures. And so I heard Eastside Weight Loss Clinic ads on the radio and I'm like, I'm going to call them. I was like, hey, maybe you can advertise for our show. Let me try the program for 2 months so I know it's something I want to advertise for. I lost almost 30 pounds in the first 2 months. And I did it over the holidays because I started it 2 years ago, November like first-ish. And then by the time Nicole and I went to Vegas for a trip, like a month and a half later, I was down almost 30 pounds. So it's definitely something, it's not easy. You have to stick to that plan for 60 days or you're not going to have success on the program. But if you're able to do it, the weight loss will be significant. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. If you see a picture of yourself you hate and you're like, I've gained so much weight, just do what I did. Except you don't have a podcast, so you won't have to put it up for everybody to see you at your worst every week. Anyway, we love them though. We love it. We love it. It's a choice. Okay, I didn't bring this up on the show yesterday. I should have, because this post went absolutely crazy on the internet. So we were talking last week about, after the election, about the horrible adults who are lashing out about the results of the election. You know, we played some stuff of parents like sobbing with their kids and then their kids are sobbing because Donald Trump won. It's like, what are you doing to the mental health of these children? And then, of course, there were no shortage of examples across the country of public school employees losing their mind on social media. People who we entrust with our children 5 days a week. One of them, his name is Jeff Peltier. He is a staffer at Timberline, like for 34 years or something, 32 years. Staffer at Timberline High School. School in the North Thurston School District. I'll just reread it without the swear words this time. No need to repeat them. He posted after the election, "Been fighting the fight since 1981. I am white, cis, and always been pushing for better for everyone, no matter race, creed, religion, or gender. My school, the school I attended and have worked at for 32 years, is home to people of all walks of life. It's hurting not just those on the margins, but all of us. If you voted for or cheered on Trump and those that supported him, I simply say F you. Your short-sighted, misogynistic, racist, and fascist asses can just F off. I'm despondent now, but you unholy MFers better understand that I am not defeated. And neither are a bunch of us who are sick and tired of your stupid, backward, bullshit behavior that drags everybody down. Your day of reckoning is coming, and it will not be good." Well, so far, I have not experienced my day of reckoning. I don't know what that will look like, but I did want to say I posted this update on social media, but I forgot to tell you guys about it on the show yesterday. So Nicole reached out to the school district, and here's all they said. "I don't have a lot of faith in this. We'll reach out to the school district again, but we know school districts notoriously will not tell us what sort of discipline they hand down." But a director of communications for the district responded to Nicole, said, "Thanks for reaching out. We're having our human resources team review and determine appropriate next steps." So that's all we know. They know, and I do know that a lot of people in that district emailed the school with concerns about this post and then were forwarding me the email responses they got from the district, and the responses were very, very similar. What I want to know in the follow-up we'll do, if you can remind me after the show today, is, well, is he at school today? Because again, like, I take that as a threat. Like, your day of reckoning is coming. I don't know if he means it as a threat, but certainly if you're like a parent who voted for Trump or whatever it is, like, that is an uncomfortable thing. Like, I'm sending my kid to school where there's going to be a guy who thinks I'm misogynistic, racist, and fascist, and I am an unholy MFer, and I can just F off, and that I'm going to have a day of reckoning because of my stupid, backward, bullshit behavior. I'm not sending my kid. I'm like, absolutely not.
Well, he says anybody that supports him, so it could be a kid that can't vote. I mean, there are kids in schools that support Donald Trump.
It's just insane. So this went wild on social media, as it should. And I think that, you know, usually when I post stuff like this, there are people who, you know, will argue for the teacher, whatever it is. I didn't really see any of that. I saw a lot of people saying he should be fired. And apparently he locked down his Facebook, or maybe he deleted it. But somebody who's friends with him had said that he did a follow-up post that we just haven't been able to access. But basically he said, like, "Oh, Brandy Cruz says this is a threat. This isn't intended as a threat. I should have chosen my words more carefully." So he said something to the effect of, he should have chosen his words more carefully. And Brandy Cruz says this is a threat. No, I didn't say it is a threat. I said it sounds a lot like a threat. Mm-hmm. But you should know better when you are working around kids. And he's been a coach. I don't know if he's actively a coach, but he's coached some of their academic teams and also girls soccer. So it's like, come on, man. Like, you know, have, even in North Thurston, where it's very blue, there are absolutely families there who voted for Donald Trump. And it's just an unhinged way of behaving when you're a public employee. So we will follow back up. We want to know what happens. And I do want to know if he's in the classroom today. So is he on paid leave? Is he on unpaid leave? What is going on while they investigate this? But this went national over the weekend. So I'm sure Jeff Peltier is absolutely wishing he had chosen his words more carefully. Mm-hmm. That's going to tie into our daily subscriber show poll today, which we'll get to momentarily, because I have had some personal things going on in my life with people who are not happy that I voted for the former president. And as you know, Thanksgiving is just a couple weeks away, and I'm very curious the extent to which you're concerned about political talk ruining your family Thanksgiving. So I thought that I'd have that be our subscriber show poll, which we'll get to coming up. First, take the first mark challenge. It is, to me, I always say it's a no-brainer, because it truly is. This is one of those things, it's not going to cost you any money. It could save you a lot of money. So it's like, why wouldn't you just go through the steps of doing it? If you're handling your own insurance right now, you don't have to do that. And in this insurance market, where a little claim can get you dropped from your carrier, you need to have someone in your corner. That's why I recommend taking the first mark challenge. What does it entail? So you reach out to them. They will schedule a time to have a phone conversation with you, go over, you kind of gather all your insurance policies. So they have that and they can look at what your current policies are. They'll talk to you about that. They'll talk to you about your insurance needs. Then they'll go out, they'll shop the market for you of all the carriers they have at their disposal, and they'll come back to you with a recommendation. Sometimes, and I've heard this before of people who've taken the First Mark challenge, First Mark will say, you know what? You actually did pretty good on your own. And I would stick with the current insurance you have. If things change in the future and you need different insurance, come back to us. But then you leave like with the knowledge that you do have the best insurance you can get at the best rate. Or they'll say, hey, here's how we can save you money, or here's how we can get you better insurance for the same price. Tanya, they also do businesses, by the way. Tanya says that she bought a cafe called the Kraken Cafe in Long Beach, Washington. So go visit Tanya at the Kraken Cafe in Long Beach. She said, we use Firstmark to find our insurance. It was the best choice we made. Thank you. So whether it's personal insurance, business insurance, I really recommend taking time to schedule a Firstmark challenge with Firstmark. I'm a member of the Firstmark family. Nicole is, Daryl and Meg are, now that they're new homeowners and our business is insured through Firstmark. We don't get any sort of special rate with them for doing business with them. We just really like the service. So that ought to tell you something. All right, another example of a Seattle government bureaucrat who fails up. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. All right, so this kind of ties in with the story we led the show with today about the King County Regional Homelessness Authority being kind of a mess. Not kind of a mess, a big mess. I mean, I remember I was in mainstream news when this whole concept of the Regional Homelessness Authority was crafted and pitched to the public as being like this savior. You know, we can't have cities solving the homelessness crisis on their own. We need to have this big bloated government entity that's going to have a regional approach. And what has happened since then? Well, it's cost us billions of dollars and homelessness is worse. I would say that's failed. I would say it has failed. And not only that, of course, the very first CEO of the King County Regional Homelessness Authority was a man named Mark Doans. And Mark Doans very quickly ended up resigning because he was under pressure, even from the left in Seattle, to do a better job. There were all of these very obvious failures. He resigned, announced that he was going to resign in May of 2023. And before that, there had been all these, this is a headline from the Seattle Times, service providers losing confidence in regional homelessness authority. And at the time, that had been because the KCRHA was like failing to do very basic things like pay its contract providers on time. Like the very basics. I mean, there was clearly failure from the top, Mark Doans, to the bottom. Like homelessness wasn't getting any better, completely disorganized. And the KCRHA wasn't even paying its service providers on time. It wasn't a money issue. They have all the money in the world. And then during all of that, Mark Doans was going to elected leaders saying, hey, we need more money. While they were failing to do the very basics or to make any progress whatsoever with our homelessness. And Mark Doans was infamously like housing first, you know, leaned into all these failed policies around leaving people in place and all of this. So he ends up resigning under pressure from even Democrats who thought he was doing such a bad job that they were questioning whether the KCRHA just need to be disbanded altogether. Well, let's check in on Mark Doans, shall we? Is he living in shame somewhere for his failed efforts to launch this big bureaucratic organization here? Oh no, he's failing up. He's down in California at the University of California, San Francisco, and he has just been named the policy director of the UCSF Benioff's Homelessness and Housing Initiative. For the love of God. Oh yes, yeah, yeah. University of California, San Francisco, for its homelessness and housing initiative, has named Mark Doans as the policy director. And if you read their press release on it, it's as if they have no idea in the world what just happened in Seattle with Mark Doans and the KCRHA. We're thrilled that Mark Doans has joined our team in the key role of policy director. Mark's extensive experience in developing policy solutions to address homelessness will be invaluable as we continue to use impact-oriented research to turn evidence into action to prevent and end homelessness. Interesting. His extensive experience developing policy solutions? Where is that at? Where is that at? It says, Doans has served as the executive director of the National Innovation Service, which focused on promoting equity and social justice in communities across the United States through policy and program design. Most recently, Doans was the founding chief executive officer of the King County Regional Homelessness Authority, the government agency charged with unifying and coordinating King County's homelessness response and policy through an equity and social justice lens. Doans is known for their work. Oh, yes, he's going by they, them. Doans is known for their work on developing policy solutions to address homelessness, particularly for people who experience chronic homelessness. They have also been involved in efforts to promote racial equity. That's three times in one thing, racial equity. In public policy, including advocating for policies that address systemic racism in housing and criminal justice. They have spoken at the White House, testified to Congress, and published papers and book chapters on race, homelessness, and behavioral health, for the love of God. None of his efforts on racial equity in public policy made the homeless crisis here any better. None of his ideas around developing policy solutions worked here. None of his impact-oriented research worked here. Nothing he did here made our homeless crisis any better. So why would you believe you can import him down in California, very similar policy-wise, politics-wise, and have different results there? No, it's because they like that he's black. I'm going to say it. They like that he's black, and they like that he goes by they, them. That's all it is. That is the recipe for failing up. You identify as they, them, person of color. You talk about race and social justice and equity. Get all the keywords in, and you can fail up in this country. Is that going to get me canceled? Nah. Good try. You could try. But that's just the truth. You really think there would be a cisgender white male who in Seattle would even get that job in the first place, but then would be like California, be like, sign us up. If you fail, no, 100% no, absolutely not. And I'm not saying that there are of course people of color who are very qualified for the jobs they have, but I'm saying in this case, I do not believe he would have failed up if he weren't going by they, them, person of color, and absolutely leaning into all of the identity politics. So identity politics at the expense of lives. That's what we've decided on. That's what the King County Regional Homelessness Authority decided on when they hired him as the CEO and then kept him on despite the fact he was failing. And that's what the University of California, San Francisco decided is more important. Identity politics at all costs, even if the cost is people dying in filth and squalor with needles in their arms on our streets. Congratulations. You deserve him. All right, coming up next, Chris Wallace wants to be just like us. We'll discuss first, if you're thinking about selling your home, and I hate to say it this way, but a lot of you said after the election, you've just decided you're going to move out of Washington. We don't want to lose you, but if that's the case, at least do us a solid on your way out and call our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com, right? But Wes is awesome. He's been doing this for a long time. He has been through all the market ups and downs, and he and his team have innovative marketing strategies that you're not going to find anywhere else to get the most possible eyeballs on your listing and making sure it is shining bright like a diamond. What song is that, Nicole? Shine bright like a diamond. Bright light in the beautiful sea. I choose to be happy. What's you can't name? Tell by my voice. It's Rihanna.
Rihanna, thank you.
Wow, I didn't I sound knew, enough I like her song. For you to guess. Anyway, sellwithwes.com. Retired Seattle police officer Mike Boggs, he went to sell his home of 30 years in the Seattle area to move to Arizona. And what did he do? Well, he called Wes Jones.
So the concerns were, is it presentable enough to sell quickly to get the price we want? Wes came out and met with us, and we told him what our concerns were. And he mentioned the concierge service, and we did take advantage of it. It was such an easy process. Wes is a really great guy, and his team is amazing, and the communication is great. So the whole process was great.
Yeah, now he's in Arizona. So if that's where you're heading to, just do what Mike Boggs did. Reach out to our friend Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. I love that song. Shine bright in a beautiful sea, I choose to be happy, you and I.
Now
like
it's gonna
diamonds
hit everybody
in the sky.
Head all day.
God, I'm a good singer. It's one of my many talents, really. So many to count. Singing is obviously one of them. All right, national news. We're having too much fun. Too much fun. We get to do this as a job. Love you guys for that.
Chris
Love
wants
you.
To be us.
Love you guys for that. That's why Chris Wallace wants to be us. So Chris Wallace went from Fox News, jumped to CNN, and now he's jumping to the world of podcasting. He said, this is from Daily Beast, Chris Wallace quit CNN to build future in streaming. He's quitting CNN after 3 years as one of its biggest stars. He told the Daily Beast, the 77-year-old broadcaster said he will instead find a new home on an independent platform such as streaming or podcasting, which he described as where the action seems to be. Sure is. He highlighted how podcasters, including Joe Rogan, Charlemagne the God, had set the agenda during the presidential election, but added, quote, I don't flatter myself to think I will have that sort of reach. Yeah, but it's just interesting to me. So Chris Wallace, I think Chris Wallace is a fantastic interviewer. I really do. You know, I know that there's people on the right who don't like him because they think he's a rhino, but Chris Wallace was never at Fox News supposed to be an opinion host. He was a news host, like very similar to Bret Baier. And there are people, conservatives, who don't like Bret Baier. And it's like, well, that's because he's not an opinion host and he's not taking your side every single time. And he's trying to insert some sort of level of fairness. Now, Chris Wallace had a disastrous presidential debate when it was Biden-Trump, right? You remember that debate? It was just so horrible. And I felt bad for him during it because neither of them would just shut up. What's fascinating to me about Chris Wallace, 77. Like, if I am still doing this job at 77, I'm like, I don't even know what to tell you. I mean, I love this job.
Over. I mean, right. Leaving news, and I mean, it's really a new career that you're going into if you're going to do this podcast thing.
Well, yeah, but he'll bring, so the only way, like, you know, people want to start podcasts all the time, and I think that's great. Like, if you want to do that, that's fine. But the only way we were able to make this financially feasible is I left a career where I could bring an audience with me. And that's what he's going to be able to bring, some sort of audience, and then you have to, of course, monetize it. I will say, and he'll be fine. He'll do great. He's right that he's not going to have, like, a Joe Rogan-sized audience, but who does? It's so much harder than people think. It really is so much harder than people think. Like, it's the business side of doing it. Like, okay, I don't regret leaving TV at all. Like, it's the best decision I ever made. And I know that we both love being able to work for ourselves and not having, like, management or whatever it is. But, like, and this is one of the things I'll say about it. There are certain things you miss from having an infrastructure like CNN or like Fox. Like, we were just talking about, oh, should we go, you know, to the inauguration? But then you have to think about, oh, my God. Like, you have to... all the things you have to bring and figure out, like in TV news, you know, you had someone who was designated to text or to tech, to social media, to the website, to legal, to all of these things. And now that's just you and your team. So, you know, maybe he goes to a streaming service that has some of that built in, like a Sirius satellite radio. Like, isn't Megyn Kelly on Sirius XM, I think? I think she's on Sirius XM. So, like, that comes with, you know, studio space or whatever it is. And so if he does something like that, but it's not as easy as just like, oh, I'm going to do a podcast today. It's like, there's a lot, if you're trying to monetize it, that goes along with running a business. She is on Sirius XM, yeah. Right? Yeah, because I just listen I watch little videos.
On the Triumph.
So anyway, yeah, Chris Wallace getting in on the podcasting world, but I even think he's getting on it too late. There's this influx of podcasts, and so many of them are like, you know, just, I think, people doing it for fun. But for instance, I always tell Nicole, I said, we shouldn't even call ourselves a podcast anymore because primarily we're a digital show, right? I mean, you can watch it on you could listen on podcast right. After the fact, but more of what we do isn't a podcast.
Right. I think that it's changing the language, right? Because I think now podcast means something bigger than it used to mean as well. Like, people do acknowledge Joe Rogan is bigger than just a podcast, but we all still call him podcast. So it's just it'll evolve in the language too, I'm sure.
100%. Yeah. Interesting. So that's where Chris Wallace is going. I'm curious if you guys listen. And then also we just wanted to mention Republicans have officially won control of the U.S. House of Representatives, which means they'll have control of the House, the Senate, and the presidency. No excuses now.
Wild.
Absolutely no excuses now. Worst nightmare for Democrats, but there have been times where both parties have had control of the House, Senate, and the presidency and not gotten their agenda through and got caught up on other things. And so to me, what I really think needs to happen, especially since Trump, there is no term for him after this, right? This is his last term in office. So there isn't this, not that he really cared before, but there isn't this concern about re-election, right? Yes. There's not this concern about re-election. So honestly, what Republicans need to do is they need to set aside any fear or concern about offending people and save the country. They need to spend 4 years, like the immigration stuff. There is going to be so much fear-mongering, emotional warfare on, like, kids in cages, separating families, whatever it is. The media is going to be absolutely gung-ho in trying to paint everything the Trump administration is doing, especially on the border issue, as horrible, as like inhumane or whatever it is. No, I don't think they're going to do, and I don't want them to do anything horrible or inhumane, but we have 18 million plus illegal immigrants in this country taxing our social safety nets that are supposed to be for tax-paying American citizens. And so just get ready. That's what I'm trying to warn you with this. First of all, I hope that they're willing to go in gung-ho to do the things that Trump says he's going to do. But be ready for the emotional manipulation that's going to come with that. Because that's what happens here, right? Is like, you know, if you want to try to fix the homelessness system, whatever it is, they label you, they shame you, they use emotions to manipulate people out of doing what needs to be done. So they're going to try that real hard with Republicans to emotionally manipulate the American people to stop Republicans from carrying out this agenda of like the really difficult work that has to be done, for instance, on the southern border, the lines in the sand that need to be redrawn from the Biden administration on some of the foreign conflicts. And it's not going to be pretty sometimes. But now that they have full control, they need to spend 4 years saving the country to the point where if there isn't a Trump Republican that's elected next, they've already done so much that it can't be undone that simply by the next president, like getting enough illegal immigrants out of the country.
And it works.
Right.
Give it time to work.
Give it time to work so people can see. And again, I'm not saying go door to door and kick in doors. Like that's, again, that's the emotional manipulation they'll use, is you're going to pull people away from their families, like Tom Homan said.
That doesn't work with Trump, obviously.
Well, it doesn't. But the concern is through the media. They're going to hope that their old tactics of raising enough, you know, like child separation. You had Republicans who went to the border with Democrats. I was down there with Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkin when she was one of the mayors that went to the southern border for the kids in cages thing. And they left little tiny shoes at the gates, like for the kids, right? Mm-hmm. There were Republicans with her.
Oh, I know.
And they did that because there was this huge national outcry driven by the media that kids were in cages.
I hope we're over that. The results of this election nationwide I think have proven like we're over the mental or the emotional manipulation and are ready
to fix this. And Republicans need to stand strong and they need to say that the American people gave Donald Trump a mandate. They clearly, he said he was going to do all these things. So even the moderate Republicans need to say like that's what the American people want. It might not be pretty. It might not give us warm fuzzies and good feels, but there is. But it needs to be done to save the country. Right. And if anybody's going to be able to do it quickly and in the way that it needs to be done, because again, I'm talking about, if you're talking about deporting millions of people, there are going to be some tears, there are going to be some real sad news reports or whatever it is, but you have to keep coming back to the bottom line is people came into the country illegally. And there, I will say really quickly that Homan was on Fox News last night. So he's the new, going to be the new border czar for the Trump administration. And Sean Hannity was saying, you know, why not give them, we talked about it with Joe Kent, why not give them this period where it's a grace period, where if you self-deport now, you can come back into the country again legally. Homan said no. He essentially said, that's how I read it, that he said, like, we're not giving any grace period to criminals.
Well, I mean, that makes sense.
I think they should.
As far as criminals go, it depends on how you came in here, I guess. I mean, I know it's obviously illegally, but there's some that have come in and caused more havoc than others. So, and we're not charging a lot of them. So I don't know. Maybe he's considering that. Like right now, there's this, they've taken over cities and there's no real consequences. So he's just lumping them all together. And so it's hard to distinguish who's in here for the right reasons and who's not. So if you just like give them all this grace period, who are you giving grace period to some of the troublemakers? How do you determine that? And there is a pathway in.
Yeah.
So just do the right thing and use the pathway in.
100%. Well, yeah. And I mean, the issue I have with that, though, that might be my one point of disagreement, is because of what Joe Kent told us, which I think was just really, really smart when he came on with us, is then you could get some self-deportation. And then that would free up resources to go after the real criminal aliens who have done things that they shouldn't be doing or who are supporting drug cartel or whatever it is. So that to me saves so much time, resources, if you can convince even a percentage of them to self-deport so they can come back and be lawful contributing members of our society. So we'll see what happens. But again, it's going to be ugly. It's going to be ugly in terms of politically and how it plays in the media. And you have to just say, we're committed to this and we're not going to let them shame or guilt or, you know, label us out of doing what we know needs to be done.
Well, when you see all of those, remember all of the Americans, that citizens that have been killed. I mean, we've heard all of these stories from families that have lost children, lost their... lost their, you know, family members to... illegal immigrants that have come in and caused kind of that havoc. So I think, you know, that's why this happens. It gets worse before it gets better, because you have to see all those stories too. And if people aren't dying, then you're not seeing those stories, and they're like, well, we can help these people. And then, but now we've gotten to the point where we've seen all the stories and it has to stop.
We have a trooper who's dead because of our sanctuary policies in the state. And that's going to be the primary, that is absolutely for the next 4 years, going to be where our new governor, Bob Ferguson, and our new attorney general, Nick Brown, butt heads with the Trump administration over sanctuary policies and over feds conducting deportation efforts within the boundaries of the state of Washington. That will be one of the key narratives. And it's an interesting narrative. I'm not saying it's not newsworthy, but you will hear about that quite a lot in the news, with feds carrying out raids XYZ, and they have the right to do that, and our state leaders trying to stop them from carrying out the demands of the Trump administration when it comes to illegal migrants. I've been out with ICE where they were trying to find illegal immigrants who had been convicted of crimes, but were not notified when they were released from their prison sentences because of sanctuary policies. And they went out, even, this is, 5-6 years ago or something, we did this whole special report on it. And they went out and they tracked these people down and they sat on their houses, and some of them had committed sex crimes or crimes against children or domestic violence. And they went out and they did these things, and there was backlash in the community over it. So I've been there. I've seen these things firsthand. And this is going to be a huge, huge source of tension between our state leaders and the federal government. But I am all for it, as long as it's done in a humane fashion. All right. Should we get to our daily subscriber show poll real quick?
Sure.
Just, I thought it was kind of fun, but also I'm sure some people are genuinely worried about this. I asked you guys on Patreon, Locals, and X, and a huge welcome to all our new Patreon subscribers. A lot of people taking advantage of that 30% off for a year, because we want everyone who's maybe been on the fence financially, can't afford a year, to be able to be with us for that first year of the Bob Ferguson administration, because Lord knows he's going to need some watchdogs. But I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, are you worried about political talk ruining your family Thanksgiving? Nicole, are you worried about political talk ruining your family Thanksgiving?
No.
Oh, you're not?
No.
I'm actually shocked that most people are saying no.
Well, I mean, a lot of us are surrounded by similar thinking people in our family.
Yeah, but you have some family members who are absolutely not in line
with you. They don't really get into it, though. They're not real vocal. Okay. So the rest of them are pretty in line. So there's only a couple that think a little differently, but they don't really get involved. So
Okay,
we're pretty safe at my house.
And Vivian says even my more liberal niece voted for Trump. Let's see. H, my daughter is flying in from New York. She's very liberal. We will just avoid talking about politics. Mm-hmm. Jack says about half and half libs and conservatives in attendance make a conscientious effort to avoid the topic and don't get too buzzed. it's where the booze comes in. So I have an older brother who's been on the Trump train the entire time, mm-hmm. right? Like, flew a Trump flag outside his house, like, absolutely. Even before, you know, I was, or my other family mm-hmm. members were, right? And we had a family reunion, was it like maybe 3 years ago? And most of my family is very liberal in Minnesota, because they see a Minnesota Democrats, and mm-hmm. they don't know what Democrats are like out here. But he went in a Trump shirt. I was like, Pat, you don't have to do that. And he just likes to poke bear. So both sides poke the bear.
Yep.
Both sides are guilty of antagonizing. Let's see. Oh, I'm shocked. I thought this would be more even. On Locals, 90% saying no. Tammy T, 99.9% of family and close friends politically align.
Did you see Jesse Waters said his mom uninvited him?
Was he telling the truth? Because I did see that. And then he said the Trumps invited him to Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah, well, his mom said she did not, or she uninvited him to Thanksgiving.
She said it was a scheduling conflict.
Yes, and then Trump invited him to Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah, and so then his mom re-invited him to come on Black Friday, and he said, sorry, I have plans. I thought that was a bit for the show, but maybe that was true.
I don't know.
Because sometimes if you watch his show on Fox, he does the text line thing.
Right.
And he'll read texts from his mom where she's like disappointed. Sometimes I feel like that's similar to my mom. She's never disappointed, but she'll try to like convince me that my position isn't right.
Right.
But I know that there has been tension in my family with some of us voting for Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I don't think any of my like aunts and uncles or anything would ever care enough to bring that up at Thanksgiving or to have like a debate about it or a policy
thing. Most people are reasonable.
most
and know the Thanksgiving rules, but most there are some that don't, and that's probably where
it's the booze. You got to make sure you're not hitting that eggnog too hard. Yeah. Anna B on X says, my in-laws hate politics. My dad will probably bring up a topic or two, but it'll dwindle down to nothing. Yeah, my thing is just like ignoring people who want to do that. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, like let's just talk about other things, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I hope that for you guys. I do hope your Thanksgivings are free of political. I would love to be in an environment where people like could talk about politics and it was totally respectful, but I just don't think that's realistic. And also for us, I don't want to talk about politics. You know this. Yeah, when people try to bring up politics when I'm not at work, I'm like, I don't want to talk about politics. Like, I don't want to watch the news.
In general, it's an exhausting topic because you're always when it's the right situation and you need to convince somebody or need to explain to them your position, fine. But when you're having dinner, like, that sounds terrible.
I'm trying to eat my mashed potatoes.
It's exhausting.
I'm enjoying this, you know?
It's like a fight. I mean, even if you're not fighting, it's still this back and forth fight thing.
100%. So hopefully that is the case and people can all enjoy their Thanksgivings and all of that. So thank you to those who took our daily subscriber show poll. We appreciate you. All right. Let's see. We're going to get to our closing sanity check. Wow, the show is flying by today. Maybe it's because we went 40 minutes long yesterday and I was like, we're still long. And our show isn't even an hour anymore. It's whatever we care for it to be, right?
It depends on the news of the day.
It really does. And it depends how ranty and ravey we get. If there's a dog involved, I'm spending 40 minutes talking about that dog. Doggy dog. I spoiled my dogs yesterday. Oh my God. Because I was so sad about the dog that got beaten. And I was just like, was hugging my little dog's face. And I was like, you'll always be safe and protected. And then I made them dog cootery boards. So it's spoiled. It's like, I put all their favorite stuff. I put some sandwich meat and some cheese and a little schmear of peanut butter and some crushed bloobs on it. And then they went over there and I was like, I love you guys so much.
That sounds like a better dinner than I had.
I know. I was like, I love you so much. And then no wonder Lucky's overweight. But it's okay. It's fine. Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital, they're having another one of their Know Your Risk live webinars. It's happening November 21st, specifically designed to try to ease your anxiety about the presidential election. So what happens politically, obviously, can have an impact on your retirement portfolio. And what Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital focus on is managing and mitigating risks. So they have a team of analysts that are constantly looking at world, national, local events that might impact your retirement portfolio, and then they're adjusting as necessary. Is the person handling your retirement doing that right now? But the point of these live webinars is, again, so you can ask questions like, hey, you know, Donald Trump won the presidency. What does this mean for my retirement portfolio or the economy and all of that? So you can sign up totally free. Just go to knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. This one's on November 21st, 3:30 p.m. our time. You can tune in like passively and just have it on, maybe if you're working or something, or you can listen actively and ask questions if you want, but totally free. KnowYourRiskRadio.com, KnowYourRiskRadio.com. All right. Whenever Democrats are losing their mind, yeah, there's a lot of Republicans who have stuff to say about it, but one of my favorite people to listen to who's always going to call it like it is Bill Maher. Let's get to this in our closing sanity check.
Are we not doing comments? Like the other comments? Oh! I'm like, what's happening?
Oh my God. I'm sorry. I take it back. I knew I was missing something. Carl Sargent says, Joy Hollingsworth is a breath of fresh air in the world of regional government. Common sense, transparency, accountability, and outcomes are what matters more than party alliances. I agree. I was very impressed with her. Melissa Hamilton, the people of Washington State voted for politicians who support pro-crime policies. I really don't know what can be done at this point. It's what the majority of people are voting for here. I agree. We just got to keep hitting home that we have to do something different. I don't know what else to say. I mean, we're going to do our best. Sally, yes, it's Heidi Ryan's birthday. Sally says, happy birthday, Heidi. It's my birthday, too. Oh, you know what that means.
Both of them.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Heidi and Sally. Happy birthday to you. I love when Nicole is willing to sing a little bit, too. Yes. Dominic, I look forward to some discussion. I will have to promise not to throw the turkey out on the front lawn. Yeah, don't do that, because that just robs you of turkey, too. Dano, although if you're going to throw one Thanksgiving dish out on the front lawn, it would obviously be the turkey, because that is the worst dish at Thanksgiving. And I will not... entertain any dissent on that. Dano, I live in Thurston County. I voted for Trump and still have all my friends and family. Maybe one day I will tell them. Oh, yeah, that's why you have all your friends and family. Todd Welch, if you're in Snohomish County and your council member is a Democrat, their public meeting on raising the property taxes tomorrow. Reach out to your council member about the 8% raise. Yeah, Seattleites just voted to increase their property taxes enormously for like bike lanes. Snohomish County is thinking about it. I saw Nate Nearing came out with an op-ed in the Everett Herald saying he is opposed to it. But make sure you contact your Snohomish County council member and let them know what you think about the fact that they want to massively increase your property tax rates. All right. Any? Wow. Okay. Yeah, great. Good comments per the usual. Can I go to our closing sanity check now?
I suppose.
I apologize. I was like, wow, the show is, we're ending on time.
Yeah.
Let's get to our closing sanity check. So we know that there are a lot of Democrats and political analysts and pundits on TV who seemingly do not understand why they lost so badly to Donald Trump. And they want to blame people. They want to say it's misogyny and racism or whatever it is. But as usual, Bill Maher is one of the only liberals who has his head on straight.
A lot of people like texted me things like, well, you know, you can't fix stupid. Sorry, that doesn't work with me. Yeah, you're stupid because you're not thinking about the bigger picture. You're not thinking about maybe we did something wrong. Maybe we're not perfect. You know, it's like a relationship. You got dumped. America dumped you. And they're all like, you don't know what you had.
No, we do know what we had, and that's why we voted for something different. That has been our closing sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. A reminder, we're running a promo right now on Patreon. We want to make sure that anyone who's had maybe a little financial difficulty getting involved in Undivided for the first year of the Bob Ferguson administration, we know, and we want you to have access to good watchdog journalism of what he is doing there in the governor's office. We've got a 30% off promotion for an entire year of Undivided, patreon.com/undivided. Just use the promo code watchdog, and that is good for either a month subscription or a year subscription, but you can only use it on one or the other. So I recommend, of course, getting 30% off an entire year, because that would be a killer bargain, if I do say so myself. All right, Nicole, anything else? Why are you smiling?
Nothing. I think that's it.
Oh,
we got it all.
Okay, I didn't forget anything. All right, that has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Our commitment is being tested on a daily basis, but we shall persist. We shall persist. Again, you can sign up for the show, patreon.com/undivided for that 30% off. And I'll let you know that we are revamping our website. And so check it out now, undividedpod.com. But we're going to drop a new version of that website next week, and I'll tell you, it's going to be fantastic. A lot of changes. Great. Love it. See you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.